I don't know what's real. I don't know what's not real.
Limited Capacity is a collection of six darkly amusing stories about the mysterious ways we interact with the internet and with each other.
There's something going on with him. It's like an act. I don't trust him.
What?
You're staring at me like I should say something, but I don't really know what to do here.
That's the whole name of the game. Don't talk about how the town isn't real. Do you understand?
Limited Capacity. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
You can submit your claim to Diamond and Diamond. And
Nothing tougher. That's what they say.
I had seen like five billboards on our walk home from the thing yesterday. Okay, right on. Sweet.
All
right.
So it worked.
Yeah, dude. It worked. Especially because there's like 18,000 lawyers on the billboard. I was like, that's a lot of lawyers.
Yeah, it's like it's supposed to be like an army kind of thing.
Well, you know what? It fucking worked.
It worked. Okay, let's get this started. We are now rolling.
That was the smoothest. That was the smoothest that we've ever entered the show. I feel like we should really open with that. So,
yes. Right, well, how about this? How about this? Jordan, you are gay.
Yeah.
There we go. Start.
Why is that funny?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, Jeremy.
Come on.
Come on, guys. Come on. But yeah, so you are here to talk to us about what it's like to be gay, right?
Actually, Brian told me I'm here to experiment with you.
Oh, yeah. This is an intervention.
I was hired for this. Yeah.
We're here to test your theory that you are only 4% gay.
Yeah,
was it 4%?
It's like a one.
I think I moved a little bit further up on the Kinsey scale. Yeah.
So what you're happened? Like 11% maybe?
Just like,
that's a lot. 11?
What happened? I don't know. What did happen?
You made out with a dude at a party and then...
Yeah.
Because we talked about the Kinsey, is it the Kinsey scale? We talked about that before you made out with that guy.
Yeah. And then that happened.
Right.
Right, right, right.
So then you were like,
and I was like, what's happening?
I feel like once you do that, if you establish your place on the Kinsey scale and then you have that experience, you're probably not going to stay in the same place. You're either going to slide further up or slide further down.
Mm.
So like positive, like where was that experience in terms of like positive
I have another podcast that I host with my wife called Turn Me On Podcast. If you haven't listened to it, go tune in and turn on. I've been thinking about it. I think about it every once in a while and like talked about it a couple times, you know, about like what would happen if there was me and one of my partners and someone else around. And
well, Jordan, where are you on the Kinsey scale?
Probably almost the way. I don't know. I mean, I when you were describing like how you feel about guys, I sort of was like,
that's kind of how
I kind of feel that way about girls, but like I don't.
Yeah,
right.
Once you go like from here down, I'd be like, no,
right? Because is there a point on the Kinsey scale where it's like, okay, you're basically like there's no turning back from here, but you could still push on to like another extreme.
Yeah. Well, I have like a lot of gay friends who say like, oh, I can name like five or six guys. They're like, oh, I slept with a girl this year. And I was like, oh, so you're bisexual. They're like, nah, I just like it. I'm like,
interesting. Really? Super.
And they're like, yeah, I'm 100% gay. I just like it. And I was
just a girl or like a girl with a girl. Like a guy involved as well. Oh, they just like bang a girl.
They like it. They're like, it's good variety. I was like, but then that technically is not gay.
Well, you know what? I think we just gotta stop putting labels to it.
Yeah,
all.
Because it's like if I'm a vegetarian and then someone goes, oh, we ate meat that one day, and then it's like, really, are you no longer a vegetarian?
Here's the thing. Sexuality is a fucking fluid scale, and there is no like set standard thing. People move on that scale. But sure. everyone just wants to be like, well, no, but like you can only be one or the other, which is fucking bullshit.
What's your label?
Yeah, no, there's no such thing.
Like, get a label maker, print it out, put it on your forehead.
Sometimes fucking you end up with a dick in your mouth and you just go and like it doesn't, that does not make you gay.
This is like your autobiography title.
Sometimes you just end up with a dick in your mouth.
So speaking of dicks and mouths, I think it's very important that we clarify here that since this is Sick Boy Podcast and we're talking about what it's like to be sick, Jordan, how did you end up with this illness of being gay?
Whoa.
No, there's a lot of people that are like nodding,
tell us about that.
All of our Southern Belt listeners are like,
that was actually from the almost from the beginning of doing this podcast when we were talking about, okay, well, who are we going to interview on the show? And we have a friend of ours who is an absolute riot of a guy. And he's gay. And we were like, oh, we should do an episode that's like almost like a satire of people who think that way.
Yeah.
Of going, let's sit down with our friend and go, okay, so tell us, like, when did you catch it?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, right.
And make like this whole like satire piece.
But then we were like, you can't see our faces. People won't get it.
Yeah.
But just to clarify, that's not what we're going for here. When you wrote in to talk to us, you have colitis.
Yeah.
You're a gay man with colitis. That's got a fucking
terrible combination.
But on top of that, more so and correct me if I'm wrong, but you wanted to talk about, just the challenges that you have faced in the 21st century of coming into your own as a gay male. And those challenges, whether they be, you know, mental or physical, what have you, I guess is what we're going to kind of dive into today.
Yeah. I think there's so many different areas that I touched on. I wrote an article, it was called To Be a Gay Man is to Be a Chameleon. And it was really, was received really well. And I've done a bunch of media about it since then.
But Rosie O'Donnell do something with it? She retweeted or some shit.
That was a big moment.
What is the article? What was the,
because I was, there's kind of like this thing where if you went up to a girl and you were like, I know what it's like to be a woman, she'd be like, no, you don't. Right. And same with like a minority or an overweight person. You're just kind of guessing because you don't really understand. You don't live it. You don't know like the nuances of it. And so I kept telling people like, you don't know what it's like to be a gay man. And they'd say, oh, it's, you know, it's good for gay guys now. And I would, it's better. It's not where it needs to be. But I would talk about different areas of my life when I go to the doctor. I wrote about this one moment that really touched me. I went to a Raptors game. And you guys know that, like, kiss cam? I was at a Raptors game. And, like, I can take a joke better than anyone. Like, if someone makes an HIV joke about a gay guy, like, I'm the first one to laugh if it's funny. If it's not, I'm like,
yeah, exactly, because it's
a risky endeavor.
Like, if it's funny, I will laugh.
Yeah, so I was at a Raptors game with a friend, and they had the kiss cam, and it was like a straight couple would come up and then everyone would like cheer and they'd kiss. And then it was like a couple straight couples, then two girls. And obviously like all the guys went crazy.
Yeah.
And then it went to these two guys and they were sitting there and they were kind of like maybe like 40s, like blue collar type guys. And I was sitting with my friend and the entire like ACC here like erupted into laughter. It's like 18,000 people just like erupted into laughter. And so the guys kind of like got a little awkward and then it just like panned off.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to get a drink because I just felt like I was like really affected by it. Because sometimes
even just hearing you say that right there just made me like it just took me back. I was like, oh, yeah.
Because it's like this massive crowd of people doesn't view that as like a normalized form of affection that should happen.
It's so hilarious that two men would be in love, right? And
I think what makes it, I think where people wouldn't find the humor there, and in a way where they're not really realizing that it's kind of hurtful, is that it's like,
oh, it's totally,
it's
subconscious.
Blue collar dudes that like wouldn't, you know, it's like two, my dad and some other guy. Like I could never picture my dad kissing a guy. You know what I mean?
But they could be husbands.
The flip side, side of that is like, there is no image to somebody who's gay. Gay isn't like, you know, a stereotype of like a flamboyant person with like, you know, crazy hair and certain types of clothes, which is, you know, what we, what society typically attributes.
Although Jordan is sitting here dressed completely as a clown. No one can see that. It's crazy hair, a big red nose, those huge boots, those huge shoes with polka dots.
I find the other thing that's interesting about that, though, is you say like it shows two women and they cheer.
Yeah.
But even in that,
there's something hyper-sexualized about that.
Yeah, and they're not actually applauding the fact that that's a real relationship, too. It's a sexual fantasy for a lot of straight men who are cheering that on rather than saying, oh, yeah, that's a beautiful, loving relationship.
Yeah.
It's so great that they're going to kiss each other.
So how did that affect you? Like, well, you walked away from that. And
I just felt like my face went really hot and red. And that evening I went back home and I opened a Word document and I started citing examples from my life of what it's like to be a gay man. But I would cite more of the examples that people wouldn't realize. So I would talk about when I go to the doctor, doctors don't know how to talk to you about sex. Gay sex, they will pass judgment. I was mentioning earlier that I had to report a doctor to the college like a couple weeks ago because he was like questioning my lifestyle, like even 2017. Or like I've had a flu a couple times and the doctor's really, really quick to like expedite an HIV test. Like when you go in a cab, the cab driver assumes for the most part that you're straight. And a lot of the cab drivers will come from like Middle Eastern countries. Right. And I've been sitting in the back seat and they'll see like a gay guy and they'll just go off.
Whoa, really? Like very openly, just like that's you are fucking wrong gross kind of thing.
Yeah. And
wow. Jeez.
And just like there's a million, like if you read the article, there's a bunch of examples I cite, but it's basically like the small things, you know, walking late at night.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm like extremely, you wouldn't know always, but sometimes you would. You have those moments where you kind of walk a little bit straighter and think about your clothes, think about like what you're wearing because someone's paid the price.
Do you mean like straight, like sexually straight, or you mean like you walk more upright?
I walk more like puffing of chest, kind of masculine.
Right, like you're trying to portray like
don't fuck with
like
me.
A sense
or
of
like
don't fuck with me.
Don't think I'm gay.
Right, okay.
Because I know someone who's been attacked. So you just always have that in the paranoia in your head, like a woman walking late at night, same kind of idea. So there's different things, or like when I have business meetings because I own a business, if I can see the guys really, you know, hyper masculine straight type guys, I will lower my voice. That's a big thing that my friends say they all do because you just don't want them to catch on and you don't want to make them uncomfortable.
Wow! So that chameleon nature is like really kind of coming out now. Like the idea that you are trying to like shift your shapes all of the time to try and like conform to how you feel society in different situations would rather you be to get to have like a smooth interaction rather than you just being able to be exactly who
you are. And it's like they want you to, and our culture does it the worst, is they want you to be as straight acting as possible.
Right.
Like what I start the article saying every baby that's born is heterosexual. Every time a baby's born, it's, oh, they're going to break a lot of girls' hearts.
Yeah, right.
They will paint the baby's crib blue. Always going to like sports. Mm-hmm. It just sets up the disappointment of that it's not this.
Right.
And there's a lot of like gay guys will try to act as straight as possible just to kind of like a chameleon to try to fit in.
Yeah.
So you write this article and it strikes a chord with quite a few people. What were some of the things that you heard? What was some of like the outpouring of sort of contact and support that you got from writing that article?
So I wrote it. I've written a lot of articles. Like I've been writing for about 10 years. I didn't think much of it. I was like, you know, this will strike a chord with my inner circle. And in 48 hours, I probably had like over 300 emails like all around the world.
Holy fuck.
You know, 58-year-old guy who just came out. Straight guy who can finally understand what his brother's talking about because he thought his brother was just being like, you know, a victim.
Right.
Complex like about it. And so I had a lot of really, yeah, people started opening up to me about like their own pain and how they had kind of hidden it in different areas. And yeah, it was really a powerful experience.
It's so funny because you like as a straight guy hear about gay marriage is legalized and there's steps made towards making this world a more equal place to live in. There's amazing support at pride parades, but then you think of those individual smaller moments that take place in your life that I would never be aware of because obviously I don't spend my life living in your shoes and I can't help but think of like all of these other marginalized groups when they say like, oh, you can't understand what it's like. It's all these small moments where you're like, fuck, yeah. like now
and,
I get it.
Yeah. And you probably like the thing is with change that happens with like social movements, like it takes generations for things to really change. Like, you know, obviously things get, like you said, they're better. Like they're not like they were in the 80s or when fucking HIV became a thing. And that, and then it was like, you know, you were like, don't come near me if you're gay.
Yeah, dude, which is fucking, you know what crazy. Fucking blows my mind. the other day, like a couple months ago, I watched Eddie Murphy's,
Raw? Is that Raw. What it's called?
Dude, yeah, Raw. And in the first like 10 minutes of that stand-up special, he makes this like faggot joke and everyone is just dying laughing.
Right.
And I'm just like, dude, and like that stand-up special is considered, you know, like legendary. It's like one of the best stand-up specials of all time. And you know, there are some very fucking funny moments in it. But holy shit, a moment of like where I felt so uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just so wrong.
And you're not gay.
But different.
Yeah.
Ish.
Dude, like,
yeah.
Ish. I mean, maybe I'm not the best example, but yeah, like it was
no
just so
you were offended.
Fucked up.
Yeah.
You know?
But what I mean by that is that, okay, so change starts to take effect over time. So let's say like from like. Let's say like taking the example of comparing like the 80s versus now, like there's been this progression. It's gotten better. Like you said, it's not where it needs to be. But, you know, change on those like large social scales as like generations start to die out and new generations spring up, like you, it starts to like slide on this scale. Hopefully it seems like it's going in that direction. So, you know, like our generation for the most part is way more like, initially okay, comfortable and fine with all of that. Not exclusively, of course, but much more than like our parents' generation. And then as our generation gets older and we spawn a new generation, then like there's that trickle down effect into that. And it's more prevalent even in the next generation. And like,
yeah,
that's where these social changes, they take fucking forever.
Yes. I see what you're saying. And I totally believed that until that shit went down in Charlottesville, where it was just like people felt comfortable with coming out with their like their fucking hatred. Mm-hmm. And they came out in droves. And I was like, oh, my God, I knew that there were some fucking issues and that the political climate was a bit fucked up. But I didn't realize that there was this many fucking people. And when they came out and just like made themselves fucking known, it was like, wow.
But compare that to like all of the amazing like pride events all over the world.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
That's a whole lot of fucking more support than.
Yeah. I actually just got a Harvey Milk tattoo.
Oh, sweet.
Because I was watching this documentary. It's like his assassination date. I just got it over here.
Is it his portrait on your entire back?
Yeah,
because
right
that would be fucking rad.
And it's actually just Sean Penn, right? It was Sean Penn who played Harvey Milk, right? It's just Sean Penn's face.
Yeah. I was watching the documentary and we're talking about that, like how progress is so slow.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like watching this documentary and he's talking about. This is 40 plus years ago. He's talking about people need to come out. Everyone needs to come out.
Mm.
Because if everyone comes out, then the visibility will get rid of a lot of this stigma around being gay. But in the documentary, they interview people who talk about what it's like at their workplace, you know, being judged at their workplace with their partners and stuff. And I'm just sitting there and it's just a reminder of how slow the progress is, because some of the elements, when I'm listening to it, I'm going, oh, that's this guy. That's my friend. That's this. Mm. And it's 40 plus years later.
Yeah. And if anybody doesn't know who Harvey Milk is, he was a politician in San Francisco, right? Back in the 80s?
Late 70s.
Who was assassinated. He was like the first openly gay, one of the first openly gay politicians in the U.S. So like probably in lots of places.
There's an amazing movie called Milk. You should just fucking watch it.
Yeah.
What was your coming out process like?
So I had a... Like dialing back to my childhood, I had a pretty painful experience. A lot of the trauma that I had growing up gay and being teased about it, I was like that fine line between like being a garrulous kid, but being also flamboyant, really extroverted, loud, until you know that you shouldn't be yourself. till the social cues start coming towards you. So, you know, when you're like 6 or 7 and your parents are like, this is funny. And then you get into school and then people give you social cues like, oh,
they're
that's
like,
not
hey, your wrist is cocked.
You're a little bit lispy and like all this stuff. So I used to get teased a lot. My parents used to have to visit the school to basically like deal with it constantly.
Right.
And so that was through my teens. And I had a different experience realizing I'm gay than my friends. My friends will say they knew since birth. Mine was sort of like, I had girlfriends when I was like 14-ish.
Good for them. Good memories since birth.
Yeah, exactly. Right out of the womb.
Yeah. As soon as I came out.
Hello.
Girl. Yeah, that's right. Hey, girl. You come out and you look up at your mom and you're like, hey, girl.
You're like, oh, vagina. Get me out of here. Yeah, look at this.
Keep playing in those stereotypes.
Yeah, exactly. So I had girlfriends. And then it was almost like it's a weird analogy, but it's almost like a cloud came in. And at one point I was like 50-50. And then the cloud just overtook. And I was like 100%. By the time I was like 14, 15. Mm-hmm. And then had a lot of like sexual experiences with like classmates. Like when people are just like experimenting when they're younger. And then when I was 19, I was on a website called Face Party. I don't even know if it exists anymore.
Face Party.
Sounds fun.
Yeah. It was like before Facebook.
Oh, but it's
I think
like,
it was like right around the same time.
It's like
was
a social media.
For gays only?
It was like a dating site. I don't know if it was for gays only.
Just a general hookup.
Yeah.
Like
and
dating.
I messaged a guy with no picture.
How old are you?
31.
Okay.
So it's like a plenty of fish type deal.
Yeah. Yeah. So I messaged a guy with no picture. I didn't have a picture up because we were both closeted. And basically we met and it was just like that magical spark fluorescent moment when you just meet someone and you just know. Mm-hmm. We dated for 5 years, but the majority of the relationship we were closeted pretty much the whole thing.
Wow.
And so that was from 19 till 24. Or actually around probably 23.
And was that difficult to like have him around your family and people like that? Did you bring him around?
Yeah, so he was kind of my best friend.
Did you guys play a lot of video games?
Yes.
Do each other.
Do you watch Master of None?
No, but I've heard about it.
There's like a really awesome episode where one of Aziz Ansari's best friends is gay and the episode revolves around every Thanksgiving where he would always go to her house for Thanksgiving every year. And like as it progressed, it would like jump forward like 4 or 5 years each time they came back to Thanksgiving, and like progressively she's like changing and being more like dressing differently. And then she's got her best friend who comes over for dinner, and it's like her mom is in denial, but also knows like, and this is really like sweet tale of like the parent-child relationship of like her eventually being like, deal with it, mom. Like, It's really fucking sweet.
There'd probably be a lot of perks to that. Maybe not so much as like a 19 to 24 year old, but like if you were a little bit younger and you were just having your best friend sleep over all the time.
Yeah.
My parents would never let my girlfriend sleep over.
Dude, I could have banged so many dudes growing up. I love the sleepovers.
Yeah. You still
got it going on.
Yeah. Bridie, I'm just gonna have a sleepover at my best friend's house. Who's your best friend? His name is
Jordan.
Chuck, and we
Jock,
met
his
on
name is Jock.
Chuck. No, Chuck, dude. Chuck. Oh, I would Chuck. Never fuck a dude named Jock.
You kidding?
What about
I'm not kidding.
What about Jacques?
Yes, I would fuck a Jacques. Okay. Yes.
I'm kind of interested. I don't know if this is a totally appropriate question to compare the two, but we're speaking a lot about challenges, and I'm curious to know what you've struggled more with in your life. Is it the process of coming out and being a gay man, or is it your illness and dealing with colitis?
That's very interesting because they're one so physical, one so mental. Obviously, the physical of the colitis ties in with the mental. Yeah, I guess we should kind of dive into that. So around the time when before we do,
we didn't really actually dive into you coming out. Like when did that happen?
Oh yeah, so I finished my relationship towards the end, my boyfriend at the time like comes out completely, and I had this feeling where I was like, I guess I should too now. Anyways, we ended up like pretty much breaking up around that time. My sister comes to my house and says, I heard a rumor that Paulo is his name. I heard a rumor that Paulo's gay. And I said, "Oh, yeah, it's true."
What?
Oh, so your sister didn't know either.
She didn't know, and she's like, "I heard a rumor that he's gay." And she's like, "Is it true?" I go, "Yeah." She goes, "Oh my god, how do you know?" And I just said, "Because I've been dating him for like 4 years." And she was just like, she thought I was kidding, and then she was like, "Oh my god, oh my god!" And then she just started bawling.
Wow, really? So there was no part of her that was just like, "Okay, finally, you told me."
Bawling. She said she didn't know, but she caught us wrestling one time. It was very like we were like basically making out, and she caught us.
Sounds like
she
a
told
movie
me,
scene.
She like she's like, "I don't remember that at all. I think she just like blocked it out."
But like crying, as in sad, or crying as in like, "Oh my god, I'm so happy for you." Or
I think she
overwhelmed.
She was sad that I had to have a relationship in the closet, because when you're gay, okay. like you miss your adolescence. Mm-hmm. You don't get to have, like, in my experience, you didn't get to have a prom date.
Yeah.
You don't
so, get to so have it wasn't that experience. An unsupportive cry.
No. Okay. It was very much okay. like, "I'm so sorry that you had to
okay.
go through this."
Okay. Yeah. I feel like I would, in that scenario, I would, if someone came out to me that was like super close to me, like after that, I mean, your teens are obviously, your adolescence is like a challenging time in your life. So obviously that would have been a great time to be able to be there for them if they're going through that fucking hard time with this Ooh. Huge burden that they're carrying, which is like not telling people who they are in a way. Ooh. And I would just feel like, fuck, I wasn't there, mm-hmm. I guess, or I mm-hmm. couldn't be there mm-hmm. as fully as I could have been if I had known.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I feel like that would be something that would come up for me. If I was
Way to make
situation.
This all about yourself, Taylor.
Yeah.
So it's my time now. My time.
So your sister has this overwhelming response. Do you feel the need? And how old are you at this time?
23, 24. I can't remember the exact
Okay,
month.
Okay. So do you feel the need to come out to your parents at this time?
So my sister goes home, is crying. This is what she tells me. I don't know if this is the truth. She goes home, she's crying. My mom looks at her and goes, "Jordan's gay, isn't he?"
Whoa. So no. your mom yeah. was totally yeah. like,
"That's so crazy."
And then they were like, and then, yeah. And so they were just did that. And then my other sister is actually a lesbian. I called her just on the phone because it was kind of like everyone knew. And she was really far away, so I couldn't like tell her. And I told her that way.
And was she out already?
No, she was still like closeted. Okay. And she didn't take that moment to say anything. And then my mom wrote me an email, and it was like 3 pages long, and it like couldn't have been more supportive. Like a lot right. of parents, they'll accept their kid, but like with conditions.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? It's like, right. oh, my son's
no,
gay.
No fucking dudes in our house.
Or like, just don't tell the family at Christmas.
Right.
Or like
right.
just with conditions. And my mom's always been like, "I'm no different."
We've kind of faced that with the polyamory thing. Like it wasn't so much don't tell people, but it was like my parents were very like very much like, "Well, what do we say to people?
Just
like,
don't
we're afraid of
record
what people-
it and put it on like a public platform where like
yeah hears it. Yeah like what I was and that's what I said there. She was like, what are we supposed to say to people, and like what if people ask? I was like, if people fucking ask, tell them to tune in, like tell them to fucking listen to our podcast. But which, you know, that's a very unique situation, and that's very, and when my parents gave me that reaction, I was just like, whatever. But again, if you I feel like it would be so, like, I couldn't imagine how that would have felt if my parents said, "Please don't tell anyone," you know, like that's
I have so, that's so I have extreme. Friends one of my friends' dad said to him, "I wish you had cancer because we could treat it."
Oh,
whoa.
And dude, the amount of scars that would like etch in your soul, I can't even imagine because I haven't had that burden where like some people are their parents. It's and that still exists quite a great deal. My parents couldn't have been cooler.
Dude, that's the moment you walk away. That's the moment you go,
"Yeah, but
we're no longer like family." Ties are cut.
Yeah, but
there's,
I mean,
other factors. Like you might live with them. You might be financially
yeah,
dependent.
It's true. Yeah.
And like, I mean, yeah. your family dynamic, like yeah. how you feel, like how close you are to your family.
Yeah.
Fuck, man. That would be fucking crazy.
Sick Boy Podcast will be right back after this word from our sponsors. Okay, so you're, and are your what's the deal with like your mother and your father? Are they together? Or because I remember you were saying that your parents went through a divorce, and you said this either in your application or before we started recording, but your parents went through a divorce and it was kind of a struggle for you. It brought up a lot of like issues in terms of.
Yeah, my parents had a really, really rough divorce. A lot of like financial improprieties, and just it was a bloodbath. Mm. my sisters and my mom, and I have two sisters, myself and my mom, kind of banded together in that and dealt with it. I have a really resilient personality, so I was able to kind of push through it and support a lot of people in it. But what happened for me is once I broke up with my boyfriend, it was around the same time my parents divorced, I started dating. And my dad was very absent. Like, my dad basically just peaced out after the divorce. And you seek out the characteristics of your primary caretaker. So specifically to me, and even my dad said it to me when he knew I was gay, he said to me, it's going to be really difficult for you in dating. And I was like, and then I started dating and my friends are like, you're a mess. Because I thought I was fine, but the way I would treat men or the types of men I would seek out was terrible. And then you think men are bad and then you seek out the bad men, so everything that you think is validated. Right. You go, oh, men are bad, but you selected the guy with the boyfriend or the guy who's closeted or you know, the emotionally unavailable types. So that was kind of how I dated. And for a good 5 years after that, it was just a nightmare, like my dating life.
Is that subconscious? Because I wonder about that. And I've had friends in my life, guys and girls, that do that, and I've always wondered, like, is that a subconscious decision to be constantly with these people that are poisonous?
It's a self-esteem thing. I wrote a second article. I dated someone that I met last year for a little bit. I actually wrote, that was my second article, was about this relationship, what it's like to love as a gay man. And
where can people find your articles?
Oh, Huffington Post.
Okay.
Yeah. Sweet. I just write sporadically. It's not like a career choice. so I met someone at a party, and again, that sort of like fluorescent connection with someone that's just really rare. Mm-hmm. So this is the second time it's only happened to me. And he ended up being like a closeted guy in his late 30s. And what was really interesting about that relationship is, whenever people damage gay men, I always say to them, like, okay, but now I have to go date those people. Like, and that's why I'm so sensitive to it, because I deserve love, my friends deserve love. And when you mess up these gay men and then we have to go date them, it's like we're picking up the carnage.
And what do you mean by messing up?
Just all the psychological effects.
Like the accumulation of...
Like the crowd laughing in the Air Canada Centre.
Right, like all that stuff.
Yeah, the religious stuff, the going on YouTube and reading the comments and just depressing you.
Okay.
And it just manifests itself in so many ways. And so I dated this guy and we were pretty perfect together, but he was closeted. And at the end of the day, I just realized that it doesn't matter how much you love someone who hates themselves, that part will always win out. And so that was a really traumatic experience in itself. And that's specific only to gay men, right? Or closeted.
Yeah. I've never really thought about that in that way of, you know, imagining if everybody who is in my, like pool of people that I'm attracted to has most likely gone through some type of like psychological and emotional damage as a result of dating me, like just like a terrible, like I just break people down.
It's these marginalized groups that are like gay people are in a marginalized group that is by the process of design date within that same pool of people. If you're a black woman, you're not necessarily limited to only dating other black people.
Right.
But gay people, just because of who they're attracted to, are stuck to dating.
And your friends are also the people you date, which can get really messy.
Right.
So that's like a personal policy of mine. Like, I will never fool around with someone who's a friend.
Are we friends now?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's get to the two.
Damn.
Yeah, Jeremy wants to keep this strictly professional, but then strictly unprofessional.
Can I just...
As per
I just
want to
forget this. That guy you guys had on... I was laughing. I was like really laughing.
I know who you're
talking
about.
That crazy sexologist, is he?
Oh yeah, James Cantor.
I was thinking of a different
person.
Yeah,
so when you're telling him, asking him what you are.
Yeah.
So
for listeners who don't know this, a little further back into, it was actually one of our trips to Toronto, which we are right now.
I'll fetch the episode number.
Yeah, find the number. But it was actually like a midweek where we spoke to James Cantor, who's a sex psychologist. He primarily focuses in on paraphilias, but he is a gay male. He's very well versed in sexuality and gender, and I was kind of like feeling like I don't know. Like, maybe I'm a little bit kind of gay, a little gay, which when I say that now, I say it and I go, that's not the way to say it. You know, I'm not a little gay. I'm just a little curious about exploring with other people. I'm a little bit more fluid, if anything, right? Like, that's the way I should have been wording it back then, but I didn't have the vocabulary then. I was just kind of confused and being like, James, Dr. James,
and he had
how
no,
gay am I?
And his response was insane. Because you were like, this is what I'm feeling, blah, blah, blah. Like, I want to, like, you were saying, like, I don't know, kiss a guy, but, like, not do other stuff. And you're telling him.
Oh,
and he was like,
some guys fantasize about having female parts. And you were like, I'm not that.
Yeah. And he kept doing other examples. And I was like, he's not getting it.
No,
like,
at all. Well, I think he was trying to come from it from a very paraphilia-based.
Yeah.
So, like, abnormal sexual paraphilias or things that just like aren't quite well recognized or a little bit sort of off the beaten path. And but yeah, he's a babe.
So
really?
he's a pretty fucking handsome like dude for a
50 year
old. Like 50-year-old. Yeah, the guy's put together.
Guy doesn't look 50, that's for sure.
Yeah, I know.
That was the full episode that we did with him was episode 39.
Yeah.
Which was a crazy, crazy fascinating episode. It was called The Science of Pedophilia.
Yeah.
Directly after that, there was a routine checkup episode with Jeremy, which was a short one. And then on Termion, you guys also.
Yeah, we talked to him on Termion as well. And we talked to him about a whole bunch of stuff. It was really great.
Oh, check it out.
Think of your favorite one-hit wonder.
Or that overpriced toy your parents would never let you have.
Or that TV show that no one else remembers because it was canceled way too soon. Now, what if we could fix it? I'm Francesca Ramsey.
And I'm DeLon Grant. And after 20 years of friendship, we are now hosting a new nostalgia podcast called Let Me Fix It.
Each episode, we'll dig into our favorite celebrities, shows, and brands of yesteryear, and then imagine what it would take to repackage them for relevance today.
Think of our show as an intervention, but with way less stakes.
So subscribe to Let Me Fix It wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Okay, so
my question.
Oh, you had one.
No, the one that I asked earlier that we didn't, that we just.
I was actually just going to ask, are you a power bottom?
Well, I don't even know what that is. Everyone says that. People say it all the time, like, not necessarily about me.
Dude.
But people will say that, and I'm like, what does that mean? Doesn't that just mean you're, like, really good at sex?
You're just, you only bottom, and you love it.
Oh, you only bottom, but you're, like, doing the work kind of thing?
Yeah, but
I guess you're like you're just maybe you're on top.
You're never gonna never not be the bottom. Let's look it up,
dude. What? That was the worst explanation. You're not gonna never not stop.
I think you mean preference.
That's what it says on Urban Dictionary. You're never gonna not never ever be the bottom.
The bottom takes it.
Here, one second,
dude.
Bottom takes it.
Yeah, let's do this here, right here.
So power bottom
exclusively.
Google search: what is a power bottom?
I found quite a number of movies.
Hold on, just hold on.
Jesus.
Google search, what is a power bottom?
What can I help you find, Daddy?
Dude, don't ask Siri. Just use your fingers.
Why don't you just type it?
What is a power
Google,
bottom?
What is a power bottom?
Wants Siri to say something.
Call a bunch of my friends and be like, well, anyways.
Here, let me look it up.
Yeah, can I call a friend? Use one of my lifelines?
I got it.
Bottom. I got it right here.
Are we playing Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Jesus
there we
Christ.
Go. Okay, gay or sexual slang, there are different uses for the term. For some, a power bottom is a bottom who can power through and bottom a lot for a long duration. Means a bottom who takes charge of sexual situation, playing more of a dominant, aggressive, and commanding role in sex.
That's how I heard it.
I was hearing it as like, you're going to take it long and hard and forever.
Well, because I mean, like, if you were thinking about, no matter what the sexual relationship is, like heterosexual, homosexual, whatever, bottom is usually referred to as like the taking.
Yeah.
Whereas like, you could very well, dish it out from the bottom as well.
Yeah. Well, okay so it was kind of
I got a good definition of what it is.
I think I just defined it.
You used bottom a lot in that definition.
Yeah, he did use the word to define the word.
Yeah, so
it's not very official.
It's from Wikipedia.
Well, Wikipedia is just articles that are created by people who just write about them, and it's not really totally a great source of
this
information.
Is scientific.
This is scientific from UrbanDictionary.com.
Great.
A gay male term, dominant bottom. While a bottom is usually submissive to his partner, a power bottom enjoys maintaining control over the top and or the penetration, the normally dominant role in gay male sex. Power bottoms supposedly have skilled tongues. They give the best blowjobs, fellatio, and rim jobs, anal lingus.
I was with you for the first half. The second half, I think that's a bit subjective.
Yeah. That's a lot of attribution.
I agree.
One.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a joke in me asking you that, but not really, because I know that you have colitis.
Yeah.
And I'm curious to know what is the world of anal sex like when you, so, you know, we've actually only really talked to people with colitis who are either straight males or straight females.
Right.
And no one was
particularly interested in butt play.
Yeah, exactly. And it just wasn't something that really came up. And so, but for you, you're in this very unique situation where
it did come up once.
It's if you are into butt play, as a lot of gay men are. Is that something that has like affected your sex life in living with colitis, or do you just not really let people go there?
So when I first got diagnosed with colitis, I had it, I think it's called distal colon. So it was like 13 inches up. So when they told me, I was like,
pfft. You're like, nah, unless I'm fucking, yeah.
Big diesel. I mean, there's probably someone who could get there, but, so it wasn't a problem for me, but now that it's spread, because it usually just progresses the disease. I'm actually in remission right now, but it had spread for a while. And it was super weird. I mean, I shit my pants way too much. So obviously, like, my friends think it's so funny because I texted my one friend the other day. I think I messaged you guys this. I was like, it's been 0 days since I've like shit myself. It was literally the text I sent.
You have like a thing that in your apartment has like those the numbers that you like flip the numbers over. It's like, it's been 1 day. It's been zero
so
days.
I have like kind of that like a little bit of uncontrollable bowel kind of thing. So you can like shit yourself. So obviously that's a concern. The bigger concern for that sort of activity is I'm really prone to fissures. So fissures are, I don't know if anybody's listening's ever had one, but it's basically like a tear in your anal canal. It's extremely painful.
Yeah, that sounds hurts like it. Even just hearing it.
Yeah, it's basically like shitting glass.
Oh, fuck.
And it's like really a lot of blood and it's, yeah.
Holy shit.
So that, when you have those, you
is it
can't.
Just because you're like the anal canal is like thin and
very like I guess like because the turnover of the cells, it's very like damaged. I guess
sure. Inflammation. So it's just like fragile.
Yeah. So that's the bigger concern is when you have fissures.
Oh, man.
And they basically tell you like no, you can't have anal sex.
And that's because like if you got bacteria. Like if you had a fissure and like a bacteria got into it.
Or just
it,
like or pure just, pain. Like,
or just pain.
Imagine like a cut in your, like it's really sensitive in that area. And if you like ripped it, like really, it would be really bad. I actually had a fissure surgery. So I got a fissure. It was chronic, so it didn't heal. And they have to do a surgery. And the surgery is called like sphincterectomy, I think. And
sounds about right.
It's a great name.
It's literally, they slice your muscle fibers in your anus to loosen up your anus.
Oh, Jesus.
So that you can get blood in there to heal it.
Oh, my God.
And the doctor said to me, when you have your first bowel movement,
it's
like,
gonna
bite
be
down on something.
The worst.
Because he was like, it's going to be like really intense. Oh. So he told me to go get Raisin Bran to be like really loose, I guess. And I finished the procedure. I was still on anesthetic. Left with my friend, she drove me, and I was like, let's go get some like Raisin Bran from the grocery store.
12 boxes of Raisin Bran.
But I'm like still fucked up from the drugs. Yeah. And they tell you, go home and sleep, which is not like, they don't tell you that for fun. So I go to pay, and I just go, apparently all I said was like, uh-oh. And I blacked out because the blood flow can't get to your brain.
Yeah.
Because it's the anesthetic. So I passed out and I woke up and there was like ambulances and people around me. And my friend was like, I'm pretty sure I thought you were dead because your head just smashed right off the concrete.
Oh man.
And anyways, I went to the hospital. I had a concussion. It was like a really bad experience. But I've also had like 8 colonoscopies. Like I've had, when you first get colitis, it's very strange because you'll just go to the washroom for like 2 hours. And I know you guys have talked to people, but like the blood loss and the weight loss is
Insane.
Like, I was 130 pounds. Right now I'm like 170.
Whoa. Dude,
so
that's
it was
crazy.
Like a really, yeah. So to kind of hark back to your question, it hasn't been a huge problem for me, but I'm also very, like, my illness is, I'm meticulous with my illness.
Right.
Like, my eating's meticulous. My exercise is meticulous.
So you don't fuck in the ass.
No, I do.
You do fuck in the ass. Even with the Fisher dangers.
When I don't have the Fisher, I do.
Okay.
But you're dating someone and you're like, oh, we know none of that for like a month or two, and the person only tops.
Yeah, that's hard.
It's friction on your relationship. Because it's like, if you guys were dating a girl and she's like, oh, my vagina shut down for a couple months, you'd be like,
well,
you want to be cool about it, but you're
the
like.
The great thing about dating a girl is like, when the vagina shuts down, depending on the person you're with, they're like, but you can put it in my butt. And it's like, oh, okay.
You okay. Know,
like with you guys, it's not quite as easy.
Your options is twin.
Your options are.
I was seeing.
That's crazy.
I saw this thing. I can't remember where it was. It was like this little mini doc that someone. I feel like it was on your mom's house group. I don't know if it was. It was a woman who like was born with like a vaginal cavity to nowhere. It just like ends, so she can't have sex, and she's with a dude. And it was like this whole thing about like, you know, how's your relationship where you're in a relationship where like you can't have sex, like period. Ever.
Well, there's some Crohn's patients that are female that they get fistulas from like their anal cavity to their vagina.
Right.
And they actually can get feces coming out of their vagina.
Yeah.
Whoa,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I know someone who had that because like not because of Crohn's or colitis or whatever, but it just, I don't know what it happened from, but they got really, really sick.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really horrible. Okay. Fun. Jesus. Yeah. We're getting into some real fun, tasty subject matter.
You know? Don't have to use the word tasty.
No,
I don't think so.
You're probably right. Yeah. You're probably right.
What else do you want to know?
I'm just curious. Is there anything that the three of us have said yet that would be like kind of offensive to?
That's an interesting question.
No, but you guys are actually like, I never really had a lot of straight male friends. My business partner is a straight male, and he's like one of my best friends. And he was kind of one of my only first straight male friends, but it's because of the straight males that I grew up with and encountered were those like bro-ish types. Whereas you guys are, I don't feel like you're very liberal and stuff.
Yeah. Total
and even
bros,
if you did say something, I know it was, yeah. And I know it wasn't from a bad place, but like, even when I got this tattoo, like I was telling my friends, it was such a powerful moment because I'm getting this Harvey Milk tattoo and it's like the assassination date with an equality symbol and I'm getting it. And the guy in the tattoo place calls his friend a faggot, like middle of the like tattoo. And I was just like, oh, this is so
like
powerful.
said faggot as in like the way that like junior high students 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Say
and he's like 35. So right. Kind of like,
and there's, yeah. you didn't call him out.
No, but the tattoo artist who knew what the tattoo was looked at me kind of like, and then just continued like working.
Ah,
but it's just like, yeah, we talk about these moments. I could name probably 1,000 moments of this. Like I can't even go on a YouTube video about gay stuff and read the comments. Like I just can't.
Oh, dude, don't ever read the comment
or
section
like Facebook.
Of anything ever. Like,
but like it really,
it's where the dregs of society gather and like they all decide to show up there. It's the worst place on earth for humanity.
I think people are comfortable writing stuff like that on the internet because they're so uncomfortable with themselves as human beings deep down inside that they feel like it's the only place to put that out there.
Oh, and also they're like anonymous.
Yeah.
So exactly. They're going, I can say whatever the fuck I want and it won't come back to me.
The internet has definitely spawned like an anonymity strength that people hide behind big time. Like, this is such an awesome conversation to have, and especially in terms of like the stigma, like socially, because I always, and because this is something that we've talked about on the show a lot before, which is like the bubble that you live in. Like, we live in a bubble of our social circle where like there's never been an issue thinking anything negatively about gay people, whatever, trans people, it's all just like open.
Humans.
And so when you live in that bubble for long enough, you start to think that that's how the whole world works. And like, me thinking, oh, like, man, everything's so progressive these days and da 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 da, which like to a degree there is that progression. But then going back and speaking to people that are in that and live that stigma on a day-to-day basis and realize like how much shit there actually is that is still to be overcome, and the amount of people that are still out there that, you know, feel a certain way or feel uncomfortable. Like, Because it's not even, I mean, even on the low end of people that, you know, aren't going, aren't like, oh, you're gay, but are just like, in some way, like they won't, they might not even be able to like vocalize how they feel, but there's something that makes them feel like weird about it. You know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. I still have that paranoia because it's like you're primed for rejection because mm-hmm. you're used to it when you're younger. So when someone looks at you a certain way or acts a certain way, you think that it's because you're gay, or you'll meet a girl's boyfriend who's like one of those bro types that I kind of explained. And you're like, oh, is he going to be weird to me if he finds out I'm gay? Is he going to like act a certain right. way? There's so many moments where you might not even see moments that are there. Like you might not even, they're not even real kind of thing, but you're kind of imagining them. Yeah. And the other thing is like when I wrote that article, so many people, like even my friend's dad were like, are you okay? When I wrote about it, because it is kind of a sad article. But I'm like the happiest I've ever been in my life, and I'm in a great place, and I have a lot of incredible people around me, family acceptance, mm-hmm. you know, career success, stuff like that. But I don't want to be one of those people that just pretends everything's okay. And I also feel like I have a duty to why I reported that doctor, because I could have just let it slide, but I don't want some 20-year-old guy with shaky confidence who's not out and doesn't know who he is to have to put up with that. And it is my duty as an older gay man. I'm not older, I'm like 31, but older gay man to say like,
but in the gay community you're like old as fuck.
I'm like old. People are like, you're gross.
They're like, ugh, god.
My friends are like, you're fucking retired. Get out.
It's like dinosaur walking down the street.
Yeah.
Dude, speaking of the Toronto gay community, I'm really curious about, we had, did you listen to the HIV episode?
Yeah,
did?
Yeah, that was a great one.
I was really surprised about how the gay community specifically here was kind of portrayed as like this, as being so open, like this certain scene, I guess. I'm not sure. Was it the,
it wasn't the gay community. Scene, it was like a very specific
subculture of,
but yeah. it seemed like the way that Ricky was painting it, and maybe we don't leave this in the episode or not, but it seemed like the way that he was portraying it, there's this really openness specifically here in the barebacking community. Have you ever, like, kind of seen or been inside of that?
So I was saying to someone, I used to have a lot of judgment around people that were HIV positive. I think it's kind of ingrained in you when you're a kid. You're like, oh, that's crazy. Mm-hmm. When I was in my early 20s, I was very irresponsible. Not very. I was irresponsible because there's just something like when you're dating someone for 2 months, you just assume like, oh, we're fine.
Yeah.
You can never really trust anyone. Then by the time I was hit 25, I was like the opposite, where I was anxiety ridden,
like paranoid,
and was,
like, about it.
Condoms only, never have experiences like that. And the only difference separating me between someone who's HIV positive and like I'm negative, is that it's luck. And so I've learned to like not pass judgment on in that way.
Because you feel like you could
because it could have been me. It takes one time. Positive, yeah. And I actually had a guy who asked me on a date, and he said he was HIV positive. This was like 3 years ago, and I didn't know anything. And he was like, "But I'm undetectable." And I was like, "What is that?" Like, I didn't right. know. And most people don't know that if someone's undetectable on HIV status, they pretty much cannot pass it to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
like even without protection, they pretty much can't.
Yeah, there's studies that have been done. There was like 57,000 incidents of sex between one partner was HIV positive, one wasn't, and no condoms, and no one passed it.
Right. So, like, not obviously not promoting that
it's
you
not,
shouldn't.
It's not impossible, but it's very low, low, low risk.
Extremely
if you
low.
Are undetectable, it's super low risk that you will be able to transmit.
Which many
that.
People with HIV, if they're on antivirals like they should be, they can be undetectable.
They can be in that situation.
Most are. Unless they have like a resistance to it.
And actually, I could be wrong, and maybe you know, but I think if you are undetectable, like technically undetectable, like fully proven undetectable, you are not actually technically required to divulge the information if you use a condom.
Yep.
That's right. You do not even have to legally divulge the fact that you are HIV positive if you are undetectable.
Yeah. And it's interesting because you enter the community and no one really ever educates you on HIV. Mm-hmm. It's like this thing you learn about in health class, and then you get in the community and all of a sudden you know someone or know someone else. Now there's like PrEP, you guys know what PrEP is?
No.
Oh, okay.
Is that a school thing?
PrEP? Yeah, it's a school thing. There's this drug called PrEP, and it was an HIV treatment drug. They've now found out that it prevents you from contracting HIV up to 99.9%.
Oh, shit. I saw something on Facebook like yesterday about
that. Yeah, they just approved it on the...
It's like the equivalent of like the pill for preventing pregnancy for...
Oh, right. Yeah, okay. Wow.
Yeah, so you would take it every day, and the idea would be you'd be up to 99.9% less likely to contract it.
Whoa.
So that's been a big technological advance in that community, especially couples that are like, I think it's called serodiscordant. It's like when one partner is HIV positive, one's negative. Kind of, if one's undetectable plus you're on PrEP, I mean, it's pretty much close to impossible to pass it. But yeah, I mean, I've, it's a fear of mine, and I usually like deal with that kind of stuff with humor. So I did stand up like a while ago, and I've had a lot of like HIV jokes. But, you know, my friends were like laughing about it. And I said, this is my way of dealing with my own fears.
Yeah. How was your stand-up experience?
I did really well, actually. Sweet. Yeah. I kind of lost myself when I went up there. Like, I didn't get nervous, but it's just time goes really fast and then it's over. I did really well. It was sweet.
I'm so fascinated by it.
Yeah.
It's the hardest thing I'll ever do.
Yeah.
By far.
Yeah. My best. It just terrifies me.
Man, you have to be the vulnerability to go up there and just be you in the audience.
Terrifies the fuck.
And you're just like waiting for laughs. And if they don't come, then you just feel this like moment.
Oh, dude, that would be gut wrenching.
Did you ever bomb like really hard?
I only did it twice and I killed both times, but I did a really edgy set. Like cancer jokes, HIV jokes. Like I just did a lot of like hardcore jokes because that's just how I deal with everything.
Yeah.
And actually like my thing about humor is really how I've dealt with like a lot of the trauma around being gay and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I remember you guys had a guest on that was, I think it was like rape survivor perhaps. And she was talking about how like she doesn't think rape jokes are funny. And
right. Yeah. Yeah. It was,
and my thing is, I think it has to be kind of across the board because when you try to take away some type of humor from someone, that's how people cope. Like sometimes, and there could be a rape survivor that's they have to laugh it off. So when you work to kind of take away these, oh, those jokes are taboo, you take away that experience from someone.
Interesting in the sense that like you, like obviously, personally, your subjective nature is fine. Whatever, if you don't like that joke, that's okay. Don't listen to that type of comedy, but don't try to prevent that. That genre, that stream of comedy
from existing.
Because in that pool, there's survivors that are.
Yeah.
That's a really interesting take on that. And that's a really like well thought out take on that because I have always felt like there should be nothing that's off limits for comedy and for humor but I guess I've never. And I think that how you said that is exactly how I feel, but I've never been able to like
articulate
that or even like put it together in my head, let alone then speak it out. Because when you get somebody who says like, rape jokes aren't funny. And in the moment you're going, especially when you're talking to somebody who has been through something traumatic like that, you just go, yeah, of course.
I think the kind of devil's advocate role to that or position on that would be that if you're watching a comedy set and you're not expecting for that joke to come and that's something that bothers you, then it would be really hard to hear it in the moment. However, there's like the bit that, is it Louis C.K. that does a bit where he tells a joke and then he kind of changes the premise about it and then tells it again in a different way. And he's like, you guys were with me the last time. So you can't back down. You thought this was funny like 2 seconds ago. So you can't back out on this one.
Yeah.
Just to kind of rein it back in. I was just thinking about that situation you were talking about with the two like blue collar, potentially straight guys, but maybe not straight guys that were put up on the Kiss Cam. And everybody laughing, and that really kind of like striking a chord with you. Would you be able to put your finger on one of the most challenging moments of your life in dealing with some sort of stigma that was attached to being a gay male?
Oh, I don't know. There's so many. That's a hard one on the spot. I mean, most of the time when I've done media, this will really depress you. Most of the time when I've done media, I've done a lot of TV, radio, guest speaking and stuff like that. Most of the time I will get an email saying something against me for being gay. I used to write this column called Try Guy that was in the Toronto Sun, and sometimes I would write articles, and people would write me, like, some of them would have, like, gay mentions and stuff like that, and, like, older guys would write me emails just saying, I hope I never have a son like you, or, like, if I had a son like you, I would, like, beat the shit out of him.
Jesus Christ. Don't have a kid. Period.
Yeah. Like, yeah. There's also silly ones. Like, I was on CTV last time, and then I got off, and a guy tweeted at me, "What kind of business do you own? Fags are us." And it was just like one of those things where I was like, come on. Like, if it was funny, I'd be like, good one.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Because that, like, that's almost like one of those. That's almost like a joke. That's almost a joke. Like, yeah.
You can picture that guy sending that tweet going,
yeah, got him.
Fags are us.
But, like,
us,
also,
man,
to go to your computer, like, how sad's your life? You, like, go to your computer, like, I need to send this right
now.
And
I know exactly what else.
The reason why I was laughing there is because it's so funny that somebody took the time to do that. Because it's so ridiculous.
Yeah, total dad. It's a total awful dad, like, awful in the way that it's awful dad joke.
Yeah. No, it's true.
What would you say out of your
Toys R Us went bankrupt last week?
They did.
Whoa, did FYI. They?
Yeah, they did. They went under.
Oh,
so that guy will be disappointed because Fags R Us is completely linked to
his
them.
His joke
is dated. They're going under.
Yeah, old AF. What would you say your experience as living life as a gay male who happens to also have colitis, what would you say that that has taken away from you, if anything?
Well, you guys always ask this question. I should have had it prepared. It's taken away. It took away my adolescence. Took away when you start. I just want to always kind of, like, run people through this, what it's really like. Like, imagine growing up and never seeing yourself in cartoons. This is just my childhood. Now it's, like, a bit better. But imagine never seeing yourself in cartoons. Imagine never seeing yourself in music. Imagine never having a song written that you can relate to because it's a gay male singing about another gay male. Imagine not really seeing role models on TV that are like you. You live life as a ghost. So my adolescence is, in a way, we missed prom dates. Ooh. We missed open relationships in high school. We just lived in the darkness. And someone tweeted the other day, being a gay man is going through adolescence in your 30s because you never had one. And that's what it's taken away to me, is that element of my life. And obviously I can, you know, be sad about it. You see a lot of gay men that live their life. They call it the Peter Pan syndrome, where it's like they're in your 30s, but they're acting like they're 18 again.
Right.
And I empathize with them in a lot of ways. I don't think I'm that way, but I empathize with that experience because you just lose it. You lose, like, just think of all the elements growing up where you were, like, they're all sorts, like, cycled around love and relationships and family dinners of bringing your partner and talking with your friends about relationships. I had no one to talk about my experiences with. My boyfriend and I, like, to love someone and not be able to ever talk about that with your friends and your family. I mean, I could have if I was out at the time, but I just missed, like, 20 something years. And that's been the hardest thing. My friends think that's why I don't want to have kids, because just that experience of my life is just trauma.
The nuance of it is like when you like roll through that list of, like, cartoons and, like, music and, like, what lyrics and songs, like, I don't know. I just never thought about, you know, all the little details where heterosexual relationships are reinforced in, like, so many areas of society.
Everything. You go to get a couple's massage, they assume it's your girlfriend.
Right.
There's areas of the world you just really can't travel with your partner. It's just like a list, but I just think it's like, I don't think I have, like, a victimhood around it. But I'm just sort of like an angry advocate, because I just want to change it, and I don't want to, I'm unapologetic now. Like, I just am like, I'm going to fight for every person that can't fight for themselves, cause of the position I'm in. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to make apologies for anyone.
Fuck yeah.
What would you say that, this entire experience has given you?
Empathy. My friends and I used to talk about when we were younger, when we really hated ourselves. And most gay guys, if you talk to them, will have a period in their life where they were either severely depressed or talked about taking their own life. Like, the stats are really grim. If you look at, like, gay guys versus straight guys, it's like 10 times more likely to commit suicide, 4 times more likely anxiety, depression, substance abuse. Mm-hmm. But my friends and I used to talk about when we really hated ourselves and we would wish there was a pill that we could take to not be gay anymore.
Oh, fuck.
And we used to all, and all of us said we would have taken it when we were younger. And now that I'm older, everything I've gained, the empathy for people, the understanding, the advocacy that I've gained from that, I wouldn't trade it for a thing, even though it has been harder. But I've also, there's a lot of great things to being gay. There are entire, like, cultures when you travel that you can visit and be a part of.
Yeah, you guys have your own cruise, right?
Yeah, like, we have our own. Cruises. Yeah. I've never been on one. They look awful. Yeah. I'll
be on any cruise. I think that's just the cruises in general.
Cruises are terrible.
One day every year where you get a parade.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the gay male friendships is the biggest thing. Mm-hmm. There's something about survivors that really, like, bind together and or eat each other alive, which is the other problem.
Yeah.
But my friends and I, like, our relationships we have, it's kind of like what you guys have. We're just like ride or die, like, friends.
Yeah.
Because we've been through, like, something together that's pretty totally pretty neat.
Dude, this was really, really sweet. Mm-hmm. I'm really glad that you took the time to reach out to us and come in and shoot the shit with us. I just wanted to throw this out there for anybody who's listening. You mentioned it earlier in the episode, but you wrote this article. It's for the Huffington Post. You can go to huffingtonpost.ca and just look up "To Be a Gay Man Is to Be a Chameleon." It's the article that you wrote, and just so fucking glad you came in to have this chat.
Thanks for having me.
I loved
super eye opening and enlightening.
Yeah, and thank you all so much for coming in. We hope you enjoyed it. We will be back next week with another episode, probably from Toronto, as we are. And in the meantime, head on over to iTunes. Leave us a rating and a review. And for sure, if you haven't already, hit that subscribe button. It means a lot to us. And tell 5 friends about this podcast. That would really help us, too.
Yeah, that would super help. It's like the, you know, Kevin Spacey, pay it forward type deal.
The whole thing. Yeah, that movie is a great example of what you should be doing with our podcast.
It could be like
a
pyramid scheme.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly.
Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. If you ever want to get at us, you can hit us there or go to our website or info at sickboypodcast.com.
Yeah, that sounds about right. If you want to contribute, we're here in Toronto. We're here because of your support through Patreon, and the amazing people that come out to our live shows. So contribute if you'd like.
Do it.
Any amount per month that you'd like to contribute, go to patreon.com/sickboy. And if it hasn't aired already, our documentary will be on CBC on October 15th. In Canada, and if it is already past the 15th, then you can go to cbc.ca and stream it online.
This podcast would not be possible without support from you guys, and the music wouldn't be possible without Take Part. You can check out Take Part at takepartinthis.bandcamp.com.
And you can get their, you can download their album.
You can download their album.
And it's
for
paid by,
free.
And
you don't even have to pay them.
Well, you can put in the money that you want.
$0. You can put $0 if you want. No,
pay them. Pay them. You $1. Yeah. At least pay $1 for sure.
If not more. $1, $5, whatever. But also the sound design for this podcast episode was done by Donovan Morgan.
That is it for this week. Until next week.
I'm Brian.
I'm Taylor.
And I'm Jeremy. And this is Sick Boy.
Don't do that.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.